coming to you live from the Guide Dogs of the Blind campus in Boring, Oregon. This is Shane Davidson, and you have another edition of the Audio Guide Dog Training Documentary Podcast. Hope you'll enjoy this episode as much as I enjoyed putting it together for you. And now, on with the episode. Welcome to podcast number 8 of this documentary podcast. My name is Shane Davidson. It's Monday, May 14th, 2012. Week number 2. Day number 8 with my new guide dog, Cleveland. For those just joining us for this edition, please check out the first 7 of this podcast documentary. You'll learn a lot. Let's cover the weekend rather quickly because we haven't had a podcast since episode number 7 of this series, and that series took place on the 11th, which was a Friday. So Saturday was normal route stuff. We worked in Portland for the day on Saturday, and then we ended up just working our standard routes on Saturday, with me figuring out that there were still some problem areas, but we got it worked out. Sunday was a slow day. Nothing really happened. Went to go to the gift shop, picked up Cleveland a Kong, and boy, does he love that Kong. Covered those interviews as well that will be coming up on future podcasts. I took care of those as well as the roundtable discussion talking about the first week of training, as well as covering some background on those two people. And we also went to the microbrewery downtown in Gresham, so we did that as well. Monday was an interesting day overall. We spent the entire day in Portland working trains as well as a basic route to the coffee shop to my destination, which was Starbucks. Also learning that soft corrections aren't the name of the game. Minor corrections aren't it. If I'm gonna correct my dog, make it happen. I got it in pure stereo from Cindy, who was the morning relief person, who basically said, Shane, and she basically did hand over hand and went, this is how you do it, and reef goes the dog, and boy, did he knock off that sniffing crap real quick. And then in the morning en route, he kept it up, and Molly did something similar. Overhand, yank! Correct your dog was today's lesson in learning. Learned on the on the max that it's better to have your dog between your legs, sitting between your legs, so that you can keep control of him better. On short rides, always have him sitting. Longer rides, he can lay down. Same with on buses. We worked on platforms this morning, which I learned was which I learned rather well, and he worked rather well. We're starting to mesh. We're starting to realize what each other can get away with. We're starting to really, really mesh, and now we're just fine-tuning things this week. It's a lot of fine-tuning. In the afternoon, we went to the coffee shop. We nailed that route like we've been doing it for years. Minor issue with sniffing when starting out, but one swift, hard correction, and boom, we were moving. Rocked all 3 crossings like we've been doing it for 9 years. Went left and nailed the other 3 and the last one. It was a great workout for both of us. We did the night route. Night route went awesomely, except for the final little part where my shoulder versus a gas meter. Cleveland got a hard correction for, a stop and redo for that one because he bounced me off the one so friggin' hard it felt like I dislocated my shoulder, but it's apparent I didn't. Molly looks away and he bounces me off, but what a coincidence, right? Anyway, what's on for tomorrow? Well, tomorrow we're going to be doing traffic checks in the morning and sidewalkless routes in the afternoon, and in the evening we'll be massage therapist to be there, which I'm not going to participate in. Anyway, enough of my rambling, because you're probably tired of listening to me ramble. That's all that happened. It's a lot of fine-tuning that's going to be happening here over the next week. And you'll hear all about it right here on the podcast. Today, We're gonna take. I recorded the roundtable last, but I'm going to play it first because it covered last week of training. And we had some great discussions. I'd like to thank Nancy Stevens and Martin Collicott for taking nearly an hour out of our schedules yesterday to sit down with me and have a conversation. Let's go to that conversation right now.
Good evening, everybody, and as I previously said, we're going to be doing this whole roundtable discussion. There's only three of us in here tonight. We could not recruit anyone else. No one else was interested in playing this game. I'm, of course, Shane Davidson. You know who I am. You probably got old and gray listening to my voice. With Guide Dog Cleveland, and we've got, let's start to my right. You should recognize the voice to my right. Go ahead.
To Shane's right is me, Martin Collicott, with Kiefer.
And right across from me, this person has never been on a podcast of mine before. How about you introduce yourself to the listening audience?
My name is Nancy, and I have apple.
No, not a fruit. I don't know why that name amused me when you first said you had apple. I kind of went, wait, apple? What, the fruit? No, dog. Anyway, we just finished up our first week of training, and it's been fun. Myself being a first-time dog handler, or dog, okay, let's rephrase that. Politically correct term, according to a puppy raiser, was guide dog user, because apparently handler is trademarked by someone else. I've learned a lot of things, and I think everybody here has. But why don't we start out with quick introductions. Martin, how about you tell the listeners a bit about who you are, how many dog or dogs you've had, and... All right, so Martin, why don't you explain to the listeners, you know, tell us a bit about yourself and what got you involved with guide dogs?
Well, okay, let's see. First of all, I'm old. And this would be my, Kiefer is my second dog. My first dog is still at home, retired just a week ago, Friday last. And I find the major difference between training with my first dog, Griffin, and Kiefer is the training methods. And there's been a radical change in terms of how the dogs are trained, how we interact with the dogs, using the food reward system, which is one tool that we have, couple of that with clicker training. And I think just generally, I think the dogs today, or GDB's dogs today, are much softer and need a softer touch than, say, the dogs 10, 9 or 10 or 8 or 12 years ago. And so that's kind of the major difference, is just that you have to handle the dog a little bit differently. You know, even the equipment is different. They're using the Swiss harness now compared to the harness I had, which was the old school harness, leather, so on and so forth. The new Swiss harness, new to me, is much lighter, more flexible, certainly easier to take off and on, and the handle comes off easier, so even that kind of is different. Also, I've noticed that you know, and other equipment like grooming equipment, there are some, you know, some differences there. And that's about it. But in terms of making a difference to me, I think it just will continue to enhance my mobility and my reason for getting a guide dog in the first place. I can't think of my mobility without a dog on my left side. I just can't vision that. I've been using the stick in the last, a week or two before coming to class, and I just found that it was difficult. Liked it, disliked it intensely. So now I've got a new little sports job, and in fact, he's 20 pounds, roughly 20 pounds lighter, and somewhat smaller than my 80-pound lab that I have at home, and so even that is, you know, different. So where I used to kind of have a sedan, now I've got a sports car, which I like very much.
And Nancy, this is, I heard you mention this either at dinner or at a discussion. This is dog number 4 for you, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And this is your first dog at Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about a bit about you yourself, a little bit about your personal history, what got you involved with any of your other dog schools, and then why the change to Guide Dogs for the Blind?
I got my first 3 dogs from CEI, and they're in Morristown, New Jersey. They're a wonderful school. I live in Bend, Oregon, which is 2.5 hours from Guide Dogs. And so I decided, I have several friends who have gotten dogs from Guide Dogs. I have a friend who went through a pilot project that Guide Dogs did a couple years ago. And I had a chance to go and visit that program. They stayed at Portland State University, and they worked right from the dorm. And I was just really impressed with the program and the way the instructors worked with the students. Guide Dogs has done some pretty innovative things with, I just got back from doing a yoga class, which I think is a really neat idea, to teach people, after you've worked your dog, what do you do to get rid of your shin splints and things like that. I think it's really neat that they've incorporated that into the class. And
not to mention the jacuzzi, I think you paddled around.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah,
exactly.
He was nice.
You mentioned you've gone to the Seeing Eye. Now, I have heard, and I discussed this, depending on how these get laid down in the order of things, either we have already heard about or will hear about another student who got a dog from Seeing Eye. And and they mentioned some of the differences in training they found. Let's take your last dog. I believe her name was Coco.
Mm-hmm.
The cutest chocolate lab in the world. I wanted to keep her.
She's a cutie.
I know, right? I mentioned this, I think in a previous cast where I sat on the floor because I was lazy and didn't want to find a chair. I'd been in the air for 12 hours. So I sat on the floor and Coco was my lap mate. She wanted wags and pets and licks, and so there you go. Anyway, what do you see are the differences? I mean, you mentioned a few of them in the actual training between what the Seeing Eye does and what Guide Dogs does.
Well, the harness is different. The way you hold the leash is different. The commands are different. The reward with food is new for me. Let's see. This is a 2-week program, and Seeing Eye's retrain program is 3 weeks. So it's a lot faster pace here. That can be a little overwhelming at times, but this is dog number 4, as you mentioned, just keep trying to concentrate on what I'm learning and stay focused on it.
Someone's going to ask, I'm going to ask too. How many times have you said rest versus stay in the past week?
Oh, I called her Coco instead of Apple and said Fooey, and I have quite frequently interchange the commands.
And it's entertaining because we'll be sitting at the dinner table and she'll say rest, and I'll look over and I go, no, it's stay. And she knows I'm just screwing her head. Because if I didn't, if I didn't, rag you on it, you'd think I was mad at you. Someone's gonna ask, and I'm going to ask it anyway. Someone, came to me yesterday because I think in passing, as I was recording a podcast, your voice was in the background of a podcast, I think 3 or 4. And I got a comment on the blog going, she sounds 13 or 15. I went, well, no. I mean, I pegged her at 20 or 25.
I know a girl in Halifax, Nova Scotia, that I bet you I could put you guys together, Nancy, And I don't think we could tell you apart. You sound just so much like her, and she happens to be my wife's best friend, best buddy. And it's just so, every time I hear you speak, I say, that's Helen.
So to clear up the mystery.
I'm older than you think.
Yeah, exactly.
Just say it that way.
She is double my age plus some, and I'm not going to specify the sum. Sorry. She's double my age plus some. She's a little my mother. That's all I'm going to say on that topic.
These two, that would make you four.
I'll take that. Let's cover this last week of training. Let's start with you, Martin. What has this week taught you? You've been here for a job before. What did you learn this time that you may not have learned, say, the last time you were here in week number one?
Well, I don't think I've learned. I mean, there's no surprises in terms of, I guess, the training so much as I developed a lot of shortcuts with my previous guide, which you get in a comfort zone, you get simpatico with your guide, and when you're rolling, and you read each other's minds. I think Nancy will verify this for me. You almost to the point, I was mouthing the commands, but he was executing them like he was reading my mind.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a dog team. That is something that will develop as a guide human. What the heck is the phrase I'm looking for? As a team. That teamwork. I keep saying this, and I will keep repeating it. This is desk thumping stuff. There is no I in team. Hi, Sergeant Molly.
But there is a me in team.
There is two.
There is a me in team. There's actually two me's, right? Anyway, I found that this week, talking about the shortcuts, I had to basically break all of those habits, not only kind of turn my own mind to the new task, I actually have two trainers.
You get double teamed. Ooh!
I have two trainers. One is an apprentice. She's my primary, and then she has someone that's kind of teaching her the ropes. So yes, I kind of get it in stereo. Not a problem.
From left to right, you hear in perfect unison. Follow your dog.
But I'm really getting the fact that I have to basically step out of that comfort zone that I was in. Look at a completely new, look at a remake in terms of where I'm heading, and to try to get back that simpatico with my new guide. And so it's been a tough week for that. That's what I'm trying to say. It's really been a tough week. I hit the wall Wednesday afternoon. We were all told back on Monday by Dan, our
class
supervisor. He said that I guarantee you by Friday you're all going to be tested, and if you get to Saturday, that's really going to be something, but you're really going to be tested soon.
And you're still
don't
tested.
Don't pin me on a time or a date, but you're going to be tested soon. Well, mine came Wednesday afternoon.
And slapped you in the face.
That dog really, really, really put me through my paces. I was catching it in stereo from my trainers, and so it made for an interesting make. Thursday went much better. Friday went even better. Mm-hmm. Saturday wasn't too shabby either, except for the obstacle course.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
You'll dance that like,
but,
you know, it's...
Again, it was relearning, if you will, mm-hmm. to do it mm-hmm. the way we all should do it, to guarantee that you're going to get to that point where you're going to be working as a well-oiled team. So that's kind of my impression of this week past, and hoping the next week just carries us forward.
So we'll move on to you, Nancy. You're coming with dog number four. Mm-hmm. You've got us all beat. You've got us all nailed to the wall here. You came from Seeing Eye, so this is your first dog from Guide Dogs to the Blind. Mm-hmm. Week number one for you versus let's say this time, you know, week number one with Coco, what differences, what do you like, what don't you like?
Oh gosh, well, it's, again, it's so different. I'm trying really hard not to compare too much because, just because of the pace of the two classes. I, even when I got Coco, asked permission to stay the full 4 weeks to make sure I bonded really well with her. And so things were way slower. And I was in a class with 4 students to 1 instructor. So we did still do a lot of doubles. And that's one of my favorite things to do in class. We're doing it here as well, where we have 1 instructor to 2 students and a couple of routes this week. My working partner and I went out together. And it's just, it's to me, it's really fun to put our heads together. And somehow I always end up getting paired with the tallest guys in the class. When I was at Seeing Eye, the same thing happened. The guy that I...
You're what, 4 foot nothing?
I'm 5 feet tall.
Yeah, okay. So
my
you
working couldn't... partner in at Seeing Eye was 6'2" or
dude,
something like that.
Had a foot on you.
I just had to...
A leaning tower of human.
Had to run to catch up, but we've had a really good time this week. I enjoy it, and
Martin and I worked together.
We did.
We're a well-oiled machine.
We actually did work very well. How many double runs have you done, Nancy?
This week?
Yeah. Like you and your colleague, your class colleague. Yeah. How many? Have you done, like, 2, 3?
Let's see, I think...
That's why you
three?
And...
I think we did, Friday, I think we did...
I saw you two together coming back from Starbucks.
Yeah.
I saw you and...
Maybe we've done 2. Friday morning and yesterday morning.
Yeah, I did not... I've only done 1. It was awesome, because Martin and I think the Canadians have this whole brain reading thing going. Because he'd go and I wouldn't have to call. I'd just know where he was. I think, you know, that's just my little take on it.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I mean, we probably didn't play the rules very well. Not that we're, you know, we certainly are conformists. We're not non-conformists. Ah. We're not here to upset the apple cart. But I found that as we did, you know, I would do 1 block.
I'd fly right past you.
Shane would do the next block. And it worked fairly well that way. But that's the one and only double that I've done, because...
And that's the only double I've done.
You know, and here I am, supposedly a veteran guide dog handler, and you're a newbie,
yep.
Not a problem, but I found that it would be nice to get more, and maybe there'll be some more coming up this week, but I don't know who my partner will be, because...
I think... I'm going to speculate, this is a bad
idea. Dynamics or something.
Yeah, I'm going to speculate. You and I both live in the same city, and I think what they might do... And this is just me speculating. Those listening, do not take this as the letter of the law. This is just me spouting off the mouth. They might put us together next week for transport training because you and I are from the same city and we have to work a lot of transpo.
Yeah,
they might stick
us
together.
I've asked for road train and I've asked for transit.
That's so why I've asked for transit.
That's coming up next week.
Yeah.
In fact, it's coming...
Monday?
It's coming Monday, I think.
So is mine. Uh-oh. Oh boy.
Or was mine? Yeah, no, I think Monday. Maybe.
Is your APS training Tuesday? Airport security?
No one's told me. I have no idea.
I think my APS is Tuesday.
Every day is a surprise to me.
Yeah. Traffic checks. Traffic checks. They're coming, believe me.
Well, that's later in the week.
Yeah, that's like Wednesday, Thursday, I think. But anyway, you know, this is why I like doing discussions like this, because we can go off on tangents all day long. Anyway, back to I think, you know, we got it a bit of next week. Let's start with you, Nancy, because we always start with Martin. Let's start with ladies first. What do you expect? Where do you expect yourself to be by the end of training? You know, this is an hour, 2 week course, and Oregon's been doing this since they cut back. Do you think you'll be ready to go home after the 2 weeks?
I think so. Yeah, I feel. yesterday we had a goal meeting just to talk about some of the things that we wanted to work on, And as long as we cover those things, just like you guys were talking about transit, public transit, the light rail. Now, I don't have light rail in Bend, but I expect I'll be back to Portland, and I do quite a bit of traveling. So my biggest thing is that I love to hike. I love to hike trails, and so we'll probably do some of that this week.
I'm also a hiker. I mean, you know, when I've got enough people, I'll go, you know, and I mentioned that in passing, so we may not get to that because it's not an everyday thing.
Yeah, it's, I would say for me, in using all of my dogs over the years, 20 whatever odd years that I've had dogs, people always will say to me, oh, what's the biggest change that you've had since you've gotten a guide dog or a seeing eye dog? And for me, it's been being able to hike independently. And I do usually go with somebody else, but I don't go sighted guide anymore. I use the dog and I use a hiking stick in my other hand. And I just love that feeling. And so.
Nice segue into the next question. Nicely done. Stop reading my mind. That brings us right into the next question, which will probably get some great discussion going on here. You know, Martin, Nancy, you already answered the question. What is your biggest change since acquiring a guide dog? What has changed for you in either your orientation, what you do for a living, etc.?
Well, it's just, like I said earlier, I can't envision, even remotely, you know, in my wildest imagination, imagine me existing without a dog. And so, you know, what I hope to get out of this week is something, I guess, comparable to what I've had for the last 7 years. And seven. And so, you know, it shouldn't be a change. I hope it's not going to be a change. I'm not expecting a change. It's a change because I've got a new dog to work with. But in terms of the freedom that gives me, I think if I've got your question, you know, right, then that's kind of what it means to me. It's basically my freedom, you know, my independence. If I want to just roll, I'm not waiting on somebody else's good graces. I just go. And like Nancy said, she travels a lot. When I travel, you know, if I travel, I like to just be able to get up and go, do my own thing. And I'll give you an example. It wasn't too long ago. I was, I'm a curler. You know, I do curling in the summer, or winter, excuse me, try that one again, in the winter. It's a winter sport, even though it's indoor. And we were on a tournament on what we call provincials, my neck of the woods, and I just love to be able to go ripping out of my room and take off out of the hotel and just go and explore on my own and things like that, although it was, you know, I was in a city that I didn't know that well.
Get good and lost.
Well, yeah, get good and lost and basically find your way out of it and just have that belief, I guess, and just knowledge that you know that you're never really lost if you've got this little creature beside you that can help you sort out the situation that you may find yourself in.
Well, you know, you're only lost if you're alone, and if you're with other people or with your dog, then it's an adventure.
Absolutely. And even if you are alone and you're lost, you still might be able to, you know, find your way out of it. And I'm not talking about having GPSs or anything like that. I'm just saying that, you know, that dog will help you, and it'll certainly keep you safe while you're finding your way out of it. But again, it's just to have that freedom to up and go, kind of like I've always been able to do.
Mm-hmm. All right, I have That's to what put a me. Plug in, though, because I just got a Trekker Breeze, and I didn't think that I was going to get to use it the first week of class because I wanted to concentrate on the new team, the partnership. And they said, oh yeah, go ahead. And I hooked it up. And I actually found that when I wasn't having to think so much about, okay, what street am I at and where am I turning, I really could concentrate on what we were doing and where she was going. I loved it. I had a great time with it. So.
And, you know, I don't have, you know, my GPS at home. My GPS is my umbrella that I picked, which is currently sitting at customs, I've said. You know, and it helps. It does help. But, you know, that brings us right along to the question that I ask everybody, because it's the most funnest question to ask, because I get some awesome reactions from what the, to, oh, really? It's a two-part question, and we'll take it around the table. Prior to applying, let's start with Friday first. Does a guide dog replace orientation skills? In other words, does a guide dog replace the skills you had prior to having that dog? And on top of that, before you even think about applying for a guide dog, what skills should you have? We'll set the ball with Martin. Go ahead.
And the question is?
The combination of the question is, the question is
the mobility skills that I had before acquiring a dog?
Yes. What were those skills, and do you use those skills now in your travels with a guide dog? And the favorite question of all is, this should be out right now, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Does a guide dog replace those previous orientation skills after a certain amount of time?
Well, I mean, just pure technique. Yes, the dog does replace the cane if you're a cane user. Mm. And that is just flat out, you know, black and white. There's no gray area there. In order for me to be qualified to actually, train with a guide dog, I had to have cane skills. I only had my vision the way it is now for 3 years prior to going for my first guide. And so I had 3 years to kind of adapt to my, my current situation and kind of feel comfortable in my own skin. And that sort of thing. So in terms of the skill I had before, to use the cane or to use a guide dog, I had to be aware of where I was, constantly in touch with my environment, know my area, know my route. None of that has changed. And, if I am out exploring, to be absolutely sure, I would, break out the cane and use it and heal my dog. And basically, we would walk it together, but we would walk it, me doing some wayfinding with the stick to see if there are any surprises there. And to get it settled in my mind to create that mental map of, where I am, where I'm going, where I want to be. So having said that, in my home environment, yeah, I have to constantly be in touch of what's around me, what's changed. Is there something there today that wasn't there yesterday? But having said that, if there is a surprise, my dog will help me sort that out. I think better than the cane would help me sort it out. In that sense, yes, it's. I think you have to have a basic sense of what is, when the dog just makes everything safe.
Nancy, it's your turn to play this game.
When I was younger, people used to say to me, honey, get yourself a dog, it'll take you everywhere. And so, I said, no, I don't want a dog to take me anywhere. And there's a really funny misconception by people that if you have a dog, you don't have to know how to get anywhere. The dog, you can say, doggy, go to the store. And so it's nice to be able to break that misconception. But you can just turn on the autopilot, so to speak, when you have a dog. And you really do have to be sharp on your mobility skills. You still have to have that awareness. What direction am I traveling? Where's my traffic? And what's going on with the intersections? Even if you have audible pedestrian signals, you still have to be aware of what the traffic's doing.
And sometimes those signals don't work.
And so I really think, for me at least, having a dog has enhanced my orientation.
That's well put. That's well put.
Not taken the place of what I've learned in the past. I use a cane. I used a cane from when I was 6 years old until I was 28.
So just a little longer than I used a cane. I used a cane when I was about 5.
I used it 3 years.
Yeah, I used it like 20 years, and now, you know, I'm coming from, you know, this cane thing. It's like, ah!
One thing I found that when I was with Griffin is if we were on route, what I loved about, I guess, his ability, just kind of tying in with what Nancy was saying, like I couldn't say, okay, but let's, you know, saddle up and head out the door. By the way, we're going to the bank. Put my brain in my back pocket and I end up at the bank. But what I could do was, you know, give him instruction of where I wanted to go. I think he sometimes had a pretty good idea where we were going, but still gave the instruction. But when I got to the mall where my bank was, my pharmacy is also there, also the main supermarket that I shop, it was there. And he was always great to say, as we were tooling along, he would say, do you want the pharmacy? I would say, no, Griffin, hop up. He would show me, but by his body language, that's how he speaks to me. He would say, do you want the bank? I would say, no, Griffin, hop up. Well, he knew the third choice is the supermarket. Mm. Bam. He was making the moves. So I was giving him, you know, giving the order. But he was still executing because then he knew. So once I passed that bank, I'd say, okay, Griffin, stop. Well, he knew where I was going. Mm. So in a sense, yes, but no. You know what I mean? I just couldn't, as Nancy said, come out of the house and say, supermarket, bang, off we go. And I found that on many of our routes like that, that he was, you know, very good that way. I think the little guy would probably be like that too. And, you know, I never had to worry about once he realized that I liked the audible signals. I didn't have to basically, on a new street corner where there were audible signals, I didn't really have to know that there were audible signals, because if there was one, he automatically would go to that pole. Now, whether this guy will do that or not, I don't know. But, you know, the thing is, I'm going to teach him if he doesn't pick it up on his own like Griffin did. In that sense, well, I'll teach him the ones that I need with the routes that I use the most, and you know, wayfind this with the cane, the others that I need to know periodically or whatever. So that's kind of what I. Maybe this ties in with your last question a bit as well. That's kind of why I want to, and why I'm here, doing this the second time around. It's just for that kind of mobility. And again, the freedom that that kind of gives me.
The public gives you a lot more attention with a dog than a cane.
Yes.
We'll start with Martin. Your thoughts on that? Is, you know, are you adverse to the attention? Do you like the attention? Is there, do you wish that gets off?
I find people are naturally curious, and they're even more curious if there's a little dog by your side. I find that and I must be one of those humans that kind of shows their state of mind, and people can look at it and say, gee, that guy's lost, or gee, that guy's upset, or gee, don't go near that guy. he's kind of, you know, maybe he's a tad angry. My point is that I find that with the dog, people are friendlier. They're more quick to offer the help, whether you need it or not. And even if you do ask for it, they seem to me that they're quicker to acquiesce. And you know, so just from that perspective, I just find that it's a more pleasant experience when you're out and about with your guide, that you have probably similar kinds of conversations than, say, two humans meeting that make eye contact. Mm. And, you know, we can't make eye contact. Maybe our guides can. And maybe that's why people are friendly, because the dog and her are making eye contact with them. But the fact that we're with these little creatures makes us, I think, in the public's eye, friendlier people or less scary. And are we really scary people? No, we're darn nice people. But people have perceptions of you know, their own foibles, and I guess and perceptions about the world that aren't terribly accurate a lot of the times, and that reflects on us. Or we get the effect of that. They're scared to talk to us. Possibly they're afraid, gee whiz, I talk to that person, I might catch that blindness or whatever that is.
you know how many times I've heard that? I kind of like, wow, guys.
Anyway, so that you know, that's kind of where I come from on that. I do think that you do, yes, definitely yes, have more interesting conversations, and you do meet some darn fine people, because people who like dogs will like us because we have dogs, mm-hmm. and they'll see our dogs, and they're just happy little creatures.
Yeah,
so, you know, we're good handlers.
Exactly. Nancy, you're coming from the other side of the spectrum. In other words, you know, you're coming from here in the States with more laws and that to protect you and your dog and in the public. But you've got, you know, the same question to you. Do you, you know, your interaction with the public, with a dog?
I always try to get people to focus. I've done some funny things. Like, I'll say, you know, I'm the one who can talk. And I was at a music festival one time, and I had a friend of mine make a sign for one of my earlier guides, and it said, "I'm not available, my mommy is, talk to her."
Aww.
It was very funny. And I try to get people to focus on me first and not on the dog, to try and get them to understand that the dog is, in a sense, our tool. It's important not to distract the dog. And it's annoying sometimes, you know, people, I have to say, one of the first, when I got my very first dog, I was amazed, because I didn't have a whole lot of interactions with dogs when I moved out of my parents' home. My brother was the one who took care of our family pets. And I was so amazed that total strangers would walk up and start petting my dog. I'm
like, ah!
Aren't you afraid she's going to bite you? And so that was just weird for me to learn, that people really aren't afraid of, a lot of people aren't afraid of dogs. And there's a lot of people out there that like dogs better than they like people. I mean, I've had people say that to me, so... Okay, whatever. But I think it's, especially now with so many people, you know, we go through a lot of training, and we have an ID, which in the States, it's not even required that people have to have an ID, which I think is really unfortunate. I think that we would be people who have service dogs, who are well-behaved and are trained well, we'd be all better served if people had to go through some sort of training and could show that they have gone through a training because of the behavior of their dog and because of their handling of the dog, not just because they have a paper that says, oh yeah, my dog's a service dog.
I've read so many stories of people home training the dogs, and I'm not against that. What I'm against is your ability to manage, maintain, and keep that dog under control in public places. That actually, you know, we're going to go off on a tangent here. This is going to get fun. Now, Martin, you know, this comes up. You know, I don't remember here in Canada what the Canadian laws are regarding this. You know, let's discuss.
Wait, can I put one?
Yeah, go ahead.
About that other, I had, when I was first thinking about getting guide dog, seeing eye dog, I had a friend who had a seeing eye dog, and there were about eight of us that were out to breakfast one time, and most of us were blind. And we were like, "Where's your dog?" And she said, "He's under the table." I'm like, "Wow, we forgot he was here. He was so quiet, and the way that she handled him, you know, she would speak very softly to him. She would say, like, sit, so-and-so, sit. And she was just really, really calm in her voice. And one of the things she said, and it's always stuck with me, she said, if you're a good guide dog handler, people will forget and they won't know that your dog is there. I mean, I've been on buses where I've had my dog under the seat, and I had a poor lady one time. I said, "Excuse me, I need to get off at this stop." She's like, "Well, go ahead." And I said, "Well, I need to get my dog out from under the seat." "Oh my God, I'm afraid of dogs." And she didn't even know my dog was down there until I got off. And so I've just always kept what my friend, who was sort of my mentor until I got my first seeing eye dog, took me a long time to do my research and make the decision, get the timing right and everything. Her comment of people should forget that your dog is there because of the way you handle it. And that's just always really stuck with me.
And that's a good piece of advice to remember. That goes for those handlers who listen to this thing that are already doing it. Listen. Back to the in public places and the ID. Martin, your thoughts on that? Should we be required? I mean, I think we should be required to show ID.
Well, in Canada, you can be asked for it. And I don't recall the law specifically saying that you can refuse to show it. I think some people who have guide dogs, and are working guide dog teams in Canada are under the misapprehension that if they're asked by a store owner or a transit official or whatever to produce identification to say you have the right to bring your dog, you know, on this vehicle or in these premises or whatever, you're required to show it. But some people think they don't have to, and they can make a big, make a federal case out of it. Ultimately, they'll probably find out that they actually do have to show. You know, if you're buying airline tickets or you're buying rail tickets or whatever, and you know you're asking for an accommodation for your guide dog, but you have to be prepared to show something. Now, I think in the U.S. you do not have to, but in Canada, I think they can ask for it.
They can ask.
And you have to produce. In fact, in Ontario, my home province,
which is also mine,
we receive a photo ID, including that us with our guides, from the Attorney General's office, the top lawyer in the province.
And that's processed by the dog school. That is processed here.
Well, it's processed here, but that's primarily thanks to yours truly. Mm-hmm. There is this card that's issued under government sanction, which basically heads off any arguments that a person might have, you know, in terms of accessibility. If someone does question your right, I say right as opposed to privilege because it is a right, it's legislated, to be anywhere where the public is allowed, you produce that card. And I want to tell you, it ends arguments right away. People put their yabot sticks away and that's the end of the situation.
Exactly.
So that's really what it is. And I think other provinces issue, you know, similar kinds of things. And if I can, I'll just relate a quick incident. I was boarding a bus in my home city, and I actually had a legitimate transit pass, which is a photo ID of me. Mm-hmm. Also had my guide with me, and so the driver said, "All right, the pass gets you on the bus. What about the dog?" I produced my GDP ID.
Mm-hmm.
And he argued it. He said, well, that's not, that doesn't allow your bus on. I said, look at this. It's a picture of me and my guide issued by a recognized school.
Mm-hmm.
You can argue until, you know, whatever, and, you know, let's just end this. There happened to be an inspector on the bus.
Oops.
He came along and he got himself involved and sided with the bus driver. Anyway, to make a long story short, I said enough, pulled out my attorney general's card, argument ended there. Never did get an apology from those two, but I got an apology from the company because I...
OC Transpo.
I went a little bit further than just leaving it alone because I thought that, you know, the inspector and the driver needed to be re-educated in terms of, you know, what's a guide dog?
OC Transpo.
And their own service... You know, their own service dog guidelines.
Oh, OC Transpo has been a thorn in my side. I mean, they never asked me for my CNIB card. I've been denied access, even though I showed my CNIB card because I had a cane.
But you don't have to show your CNIB card. CNIB is a charity. Why would you show...
Because they ask for it.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. This is not the place for that.
Yeah, no, but...
But the thing is, you can show your attorney general's card.
And that'll shut them up.
Well, not only will it shut them up, it entitles you to the privileges... dictated under
by law.
Transit, no, not by law, under transit guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own set of laws and guidelines which their employees have to adhere to. You know, and when they fail to adhere, what I find is the Attorney General card just ends all argument. Now, we're lucky that in our jurisdiction, and I don't know about you, Nancy, in Bend, you know, whether you know, you pay full fare or whatever. I know in a lot of jurisdictions that is the case. Some jurisdictions have
half price,
for lack of a better way to put it, a dispensation where you pay, you either, you know, you have a token, you make a token payment. And as a matter of fact, I think it still stands in Kingston, Ontario, the fare for a person who is blind is 10 cents, a dime. And in Ottawa, basically, a person who is blind, the fare is free. There's no charge for the fare. But what that doesn't do is absolve the transit
of
the responsibility of providing the service which they provide any rider.
Mm.
So, you know, they can argue, but the argument, by and large, comes from ignorance and, you know, the misunderstanding of their own guidelines.
And the Attorney General's card's an argument ender.
That I might be making for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's just easily settled, you know, in a very friendly sort of way. It's easily settled. Just point out their own guidelines. And I'll tell you, you know, eventually this will stop happening to you because it doesn't happen to me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
In situations like that, you know, whether I'm on Metro in Montreal or TCC in Toronto or
OC in Ottawa,
SkyTrain in Vancouver, it doesn't matter.
Well, folks, it's been a slice. It's been fun. Let's try and wrap this up here because some of us probably have things to do, even though we could go on for hours. Let's try not to. Let's go final thoughts. Let's go with you, Nancy. Final thoughts and maybe some, information, you know, maybe some thoughts for those who are looking at applying for a dog. Some advice you might give those that are looking at applying.
Well, I think final thoughts. Think about whether you're somebody who wants to learn how to take care of a dog because you can't fold it up and stick it in your pack or in a cane.
Even though there are days you'd love to.
So. It did take me a while to make that decision. I will say that it's easier to pick up dog poop than it is to change a baby's diaper.
I've done both.
Me too. That was one of the things that kept me from wanting to get a dog because I thought I stepped in enough dog doo in my day that I thought, oh, I wouldn't want to have a dog, you know, because it's gross and it's like well, if you pick it up right away, it really isn't so bad. But I think just knowing that, you know, the dog's with you 24/7, pretty much, they are a lot of fun. There's some great benefits to having a dog.
They're great stress reliever.
And it's a two-way street, though. You have to be willing to really care for the dog and treat it as a being with feelings, because they do. I know people think I'm nuts to say it, but they do have feelings, and you can't just treat them like a tool, even though they're known as a mobility aid for us. They're still they're creatures, and they
have wants and needs, and sometimes like the one laying beside.
Oh, I agree, Nancy.
Turn into a royal.
I think any creature that dreams is intelligent.
Yeah.
And sometimes
and
they turn into a pain.
These guys are very intelligent.
Yeah.
And we've all had them dream. And what I love about the guide dog lifestyle, I'm never alone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I have someone, or I guess a creature, that loves me unconditionally. And, you know, I could be having a bad hair day. Makes no difference to the dog.
You call him Wag Ass
Nick. In the sense, he just comes and makes me, you know, makes my hair fall back in place, because he just, or she just there's that bond that's there, and you're never alone.
The other thing too, you know,
don't need to be home alone, lonely, if you got a little creature with you.
You know, it also, you know, something I'd like to cover, you know, today, you know, Cleveland was being a little terror. He knew it. I knew it. He was being a little terroristic tweeb. You know, and I had to correct him once, and I had no choice but to get firm with the correction. I put him on tie down, let him stoop for 5 minutes, grabbed, you know, went back and got him, and he just sat there and wagged. He knew, you know, and he knew he'd done wrong, and when I went and got him, he put up his paws, you know, licked my hand, wagged his tail, and we were all good. You know, the dogs will know when they've done wrong, and they know when their mommies or daddies are mad at them. No, they don't. Give them 5 minutes, they're done.
You know, I think they do remember, but they don't remember the bad stuff.
No, they don't remember the bad specific thing.
You know, they'll remember a route. And I don't mean a route that you travel every day because you're going to work or you know, whatever. But I mean a route, and I'll give a quick example. I actually did a route. 12 months later did the same route, and the, you know, the dog didn't remember that route. So they have a memory in a sense, but I think I know what you mean, Nancy.
Let's quickly wrap this up, because I just heard a whisper that we need to go.
Any
final thoughts from you, Martin, before we end this?
No, I'm fine.
All right, thank you very much, both of you, for taking the time to be with us tonight and for giving listeners some insight from you guys as veterans. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Shane.
Thank you. And it was a pleasure speaking with Martin and Nancy on that Sunday night, and I hope you learned something, and I hope you got something from that roundtable discussion. With that said, from Guide Dogs for the Blind in Boring, Oregon, on Monday, May 14th, 2012, that's the end of Podcast 8. We'll see you on Podcast 9. And that ends this episode. I hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I enjoyed putting it together for you. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or complaints, you can leave a comment on the blog post that you downloaded this thing from, or you can email Shane, Shane, @shane.net. Hope to see you next time.